Oop, that's it. Yes. Okay. Terrible affliction when you're only 5'2". So it was one of those things where I knew I'd said I'd come back, so thank you for having me back. And then I couldn't for the life of me remember what we said we were talking about. So I messaged Melissa, who said, peace. So basically, I've been down a rabbit hole of all sorts of things. So I've actually probably got enough preparation done for a 12-month series of sermons on peace. So that'll stand me in good stead. One of the things I think about when I hear the word peace is, in church terms, the sharing of the peace, which my beloved husband absolutely detests. No matter how much I explain the theology of it, he's not having it. Now, this is defined by Cartoon Church. This is a time during the service which is set aside for people to be nice to one another. Different people share the peace in different ways. The non-participant tries to avoid eye contact in the knowledge that soon this indignity will end. The personal space invader, purveyor of unwanted hugs and kisses. The Olympic peace giver, aiming to greet the entire congregation, eyes already on the next victim. Or the church business conductor, who will bless you with many ministry opportunities, and instead of wishing you the Lord's peace, ask if you can do coffee 3 months hence. Now, there are strategies, if you share my husband's dislike, for avoiding it. Adopt an imitating, you know the word I mean, stance. Start frantically looking up the next hymn. Find some change for the collection. Go and hide in the kitchen to make the coffee. Or hide under your jumper. Or basically come with both arms bandaged, mummy style. That's not what we should be doing, of course. Then I went on a different tangent and thought about the fruit of the Spirit, as we heard in our prayers there. So thank you very much. Now, I spent a long time being a teaching assistant. I was a teaching assistant for 7 years. But I've been involved in children's ministry and work since I was 15, which is only 5 years ago, you know. I wish. So we always like to have object lessons. Now, I know some people don't approve of doing this with the fruit of the Spirit, so I hope you'll bear with me. So we use actual fruit to help it, you know, cement in the children's, and to be fair, in our minds as well. And I've always done it as the fruit of the Spirit is peace. And we have an orange that represents peace, because orange come in pieces. I know we call them segments, but when you're only five, you know, so pieces. But then I looked up and apparently discovered that other fruit, as it were, are available. Now, when I use fruit to talk about, I use my banana. It's a bit poorly, this one. I use my banana cake tomorrow. I use my banana to speak about joy, because it smiles at you. Yeah, don't worry, I'm taking the medication, but it does smile at you. But I came across this and I rather like it. The curved shape of bananas represents flexibility and adaptability in our spiritual journey. Peel away your worries and find inner peace. Bananas remind us to let go of negativity and just trust in God. Just as a banana ripens over time, our spiritual growth requires patience and gradual development. The word peace is common in most languages. People talk about peace treaties or times of peace. For them, it means the absence of war. And some of you may remember that The original jelly... No, it's empty. Don't get excited, Melissa. The original jelly babies, when they first came out, were called peace babies. But it has to be Maynard's. Has to be Maynard's. Bassett's and Monson. But yeah, so peace babies. In the Bible, the world peace can refer to the absence of conflict, but it also points to the presence of something better in its place. With the apologies to the Old Testament scholars amongst you, the Hebrew word for peace, of course, is shalom. And in the New Testament, it's the Greek word Irene, which is where you get the name Irene from. My mother was not well named. The most basic meaning of shalom, as I'm sure you all know, is complete or whole. The word can refer to a stone that has a perfect whole shape with no cracks, as we can read about in Joshua. And it also refers to a completed stone wall that has no gaps and no missing bricks. Shalom refers to something that's complex, with lots of pieces, but it's always in a state of completeness and wholeness. So Job could apparently say his tents are in a state of shalom because he counted his flock and all the animals were there. And this is why shalom can refer to a person's well-being. When David visits his brothers on the battlefield, he asks about their shalom in 1 Samuel. The core idea is that life is complex, full of moving parts and relationships and situations. And when any of these is out of alignment or missing, our shalom breaks down. Life is no longer whole and it needs to be restored. So if you then use shalom as a verb, to bring shalom literally means to make complete or restore. So this is what Solomon does. He brings shalom to the unfinished temple when he completes it. Now, I know that you're all good neighbours, but if your animals accidentally damage your neighbour's field, you shalom them by giving them a complete repayment for their loss. You take what's missing and you restore it to wholeness. And the same goes for human relationships. In the book of Proverbs, to reconcile and heal a broken relationship is to bring shalom. When rival kingdoms make it in the Bible, it doesn't just mean that they stop fighting. It also means they start working together for each other's benefit. Now, this is, of course, what the Israel's kings were supposed to do, but it rarely happened. So the prophet Isaiah looks forward to a future king. In the famous passage from Isaiah 9, 6 to 7, it's as if we'd practiced, which we didn't. The Lord knows what he's doing. Often read during Christmas services, we're told of the child that will come, highlighting the dual nature of the Messiah, a human child born and a divine being given. In verse 7, there are promises of the limitless expansion of his rule, and the peace he brings. In Isaiah 11, 1 to 10, we hear about the messianic branch. A new leader will emerge from the seemingly dead line of Jesse, King David's father. This new king will be filled with the Spirit of the Lord, bringing wisdom, understanding, counsel, might, and knowledge. The ruler will judge with righteousness, not based on appearances, but with equity for the poor and meek, and will destroy the wicked with divine power. And then in verses 6 to 9, we have the famous peaceable kingdom imagery. This signifies a world full of God's knowledge. The root of Jesse will stand as a signal or banner for all people, drawing nations to ask of him and his dwelling place, and it will be glorious, heralding the new age. This passage is widely used during Advent as a prophecy of Jesus' coming. Christians see Jesus as the fulfillment of this prophecy, bringing true peace and restoring all of creation. It offers hope for a future where God's perfect reign brings justice and universal peace, transforming all relationships. As we've heard, Jesus' birth in the New Testament was announced as the arrival of Irene. What a lovely, peaceful image. The tiny baby in the manger, fast asleep. Yeah, right. I bet he screamed at 2 o'clock in the morning as well. However, the tiny baby grows up and said to his followers in John 14:27, "My peace I give to you all." The apostles claimed that Jesus made peace between us messed up humans and God when he died and rose from the dead. The idea is that he restored to wholeness the broken relationship with humans and our Creator. That's why the Apostle Paul can say in Ephesians 2, verse 14, that Jesus himself is our peace. He was and is the whole, complete human that we are meant to be. But we have failed to be, and now he gives us his life as a gift. As his followers, we are called to create peace. Because after all, blessed are the peacemakers. And that's got nothing to do with the fact I'm a huge Monty Python fan and I have a cheese advent calendar. It's been 2,000 years since God's love entered human flesh in Jesus. Yet our world is no closer to the peaceable kingdom foretold in Isaiah 11. Russia's war reigns in Ukraine. People continue to die in Gaza. President Trump's masked agents continue to tear families apart. The list goes on. What has become of "they will not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain"? For some, the answer is provided by an American cartoon character, no, I hadn't heard of it either, called Pogo, who once said, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." For too long, we have believed that the attributes of the Messiah described in Isaiah 11 will be automatically given to humanity with no effort on our part. Yet Jesus plainly taught his followers, "You are my friends if you do what I command you," in John 15, verse 14. If you do. Jesus never said he would do it for us. Rather, he gives us an example for all time. God isn't a cosmic nanny who puts all right all our wrongs. The peaceable kingdom begins with you and me, and it's a 24/7 vocation. It's that simple and that hard, all at the same time. Isaiah speaks of a shoot coming out of the stump of Jesse. In Judeo-Christian tradition, King David is often portrayed as the best king of Israel. If you read 1 and 2 Samuel closely, you might want to challenge this view. Yes, I can tell by the knowing looks some of you have. Isaiah, he doesn't mention David by name, but we do know that David murders, lies, and commits adultery, and more, to get his own way. The coming king will embody the best of the past, whilst incorporating qualities scarcely any ruler in history has ever possessed. We live in a time when too many world leaders tend to compete for the most repressive and violent regimes. One man, and it's usually a man, needs to prove something to the world at everyone else's expense. The imagery of peace in Isaiah 11 is vivid and moving. Ferocious wild animals cohabit peacefully with vulnerable and weak young creatures. Not a zoological fact. It's an aspirational image and an image that speaks to the conflicts of our worlds today. Isaiah writes that this image becomes real as a result of the presence of the Spirit of God. And at this time, we should hold Isaiah 11, the peace talks about Ukraine, together, indeed with all the conflicts in the world at this time, and allow the words of the prophet to shape our prayers. Let us truly believe that peace will happen. And let us pray that those engaged in seeking it may be guided by the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, and the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. The gospel at our morning service this morning came from Matthew and told of John the Baptist, who came to prepare the way. So I'd like to finish with this. It's all sort of a call to action for the fruit of the Spirit, of course, including peace. Get the news writers ready. Rearrange their headlines with words of hope and expectation. Get the economists excited. Give them news of upturns and renewal in people's values rather than market value. Get the politicians lobbied. Inform them it is time to measure their new index of the nation's gross national happiness. Get the poor prepared. Invite them to find their place at table and help themselves to a banquet shared with the rich. Get justice underway. Get busy crushing the darkness and countering the now exposed half-truths of those in power. Get the bread of life baked. Get the wine of truth poured. And bring on the advent of God. Prepare ye the way of the Lord. Amen.